Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Let's get started.
Straight from New York, yo, yo, this handsome man.
You
yo,
are now tuned in to Al Joe the Funk Master. Watch your grill, yoga, knocked out cold fast. And talking shit, now we talking facts. When the mountain off the back, you in trouble, came to burst your bubble. I don't shelter punches, they find home on your mind about a double. This the weekly scraps. You don't need a map, GPS, I'm right here to lead a dash. The world doesn't know it needs, but I grow disease. Planet fuck a name and a fame, only legacy remains. Remember the name, Al Jermaine Sterling.
It ain't shit, it ain't safe.
Motherfucker.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Weekly Scraps, episode 101. This is the I'm coming for that ass edition. So just know I'm coming for that ass. Big fight weekend. And obviously, I'm in a great mood because things could not have gone better in terms of locking up what should be now an obvious decision for, which it was obvious a year ago, but an obvious decision for the next title challenger at the bantamweight division. So I'm super pumped about that. Corey Sandhagen went out there and he returned to his original form as being the Sandman and doing his job. So I'm just happy about that. I'm always one of those guys, and I said this before, I never like saying I want to see this guy lose. And even in this case, it wasn't that I wanted to see Marlon lose, but I wanted to see Corey win. By all costs, whatever it is that he could do was a decision, boring decision, or a boring fight, I'll take it, you know, because I think that just makes my performance look that much better. But for Corey to go out there and do what he did, I think it even makes it better in that regards, you know, with him getting a dominating win in that sense. And there's a lot of things that I took away from that performance, and we're going to get into that. I'm getting ready to head back to New York for a couple of days and going to get some things done, get the house in order for a couple of stuff. I got the Airbnb I got to set up. I got this one thing I got to get filled out for the town so that everything's legalized on the up and up with this the certificate of occupancy. So it's, I got to get a couple of things done. And my girlfriend's got her family coming over, so we're going to be spending some good quality time together down there. But other than that, man, I got my injection in my neck last week. I'm going to wait a couple more days to see what the results are in terms of it actually taking effect and doing what it's supposed to do and reducing the inflammation in my neck. So hopefully that does happen. I got an MRI today, two actually, for my wrist and for my knee. And just doing what I could do to make sure I'm ready and just covering all my bases, you know, dotting my I's, crossing my T's. All right, so let's get back into this crazy performance. Corey Sandhagen, Marlon Moraes, obviously everyone knew what was going on. Why isn't your title shot announced? Why isn't it this? Why isn't it that? You're not going to get the title shot. You're going to get passed up. This was the next guy who could have potentially blocked me. And it's like, I don't know. I don't want to say God or Allah, whatever. Whatever you believe in, the higher powers definitely had a plan. And I think that was the icing on the cake to solidify that there is no more dancing around the fact that I should be the number one guy. And I am the number one guy. I think I was the number one guy last year when Pedro Munhoz knocked out Cody Garbrandt and then I beat Pedro Munhoz. That should have put me back in the number one spot. It didn't. Then I fight Corey Sandhagen. I get the win there. I was told this was a number one contender fight. It didn't happen. Then enter Dominic Cruz. He gets thrown in there. Oh, Dominic Cruz, how can you not give it to him? He's a legend, blah, blah, blah. Henry Cejudo wants to fight him. He wants to fight the toughest guy. Really? You want to fight the toughest guys who are coming off of a loss and being on the couch for 4 years? Not the exact couch, but being behind the desk just commentating for 4 years and not actually getting in there and competing? Yeah, he could have been training and whatnot, healing his injuries. Yes. That does happen, but has not been actively competing. The division has grown and passed him by. Okay, whatever. He got his shot. He's a legend. I get it. If it wasn't for Dominic Cruz, I potentially wouldn't be in the spot that I am in now. So thank you for that. Now, next up, after him, you have Jose Aldo. Now I want to come down to 135. All right, now we got another craziness. He has to fight Marlon Moraes. Close fight, split decision, but he loses. Dana White treats it as a win for Jose Aldo. He gets the title shot. He fights Henry Cejudo. No, he didn't fight Henry Cejudo. He fights Petr Yan after Henry Cejudo retires. Fights Petr Yan for the belt. Vacant title. So I thought I was definitely a shoe-in for that. No, Petr Yan's a shoe-in. All right. Okay, Dana, I see what you're doing. You give Petr Yan a title shot from beating Uriah Faber. Who did he beat before that? Oh, he beat Jimmy Rivera, who I beat. So he beat him after me. And then on top of that, he beat a guy who was ranked even lower than Jimmy Rivera in Uriah Faber, who was temporarily retired. Gets a win, third round, he throws a kick, ends up turning into a kick, and the foot alone slaps Uriah Faber and knocks him out, which is crazy. It should show something that Uriah Faber isn't the Uriah Faber that he used to be a couple of years ago. And that's no knock on him. Father Time is undefeated. It's going to happen to everybody. If you stick around long enough, it will happen to you. After that, Aldo loses the fight. Petr Yan is now champion. Okay, so I gotta be next. Oh wait, we're not gonna announce it yet. We're waiting on this. Frankie Edgar's fighting Pedro Munhoz. Another roadblock. Do you see all the hoops I had to jump through? All the emotional stress that I was dealing with. It was just a roller coaster. Up here, okay, I gotta be the next guy. Okay, we're back down here. We already took the dip. Now we're back at the bottom, trying to see if things are gonna work out for us. Then I get the opportunity. It looks like things are great. We're going up the roller coaster. We're about to go down. And it's like we just fall right back and we don't get to actually take off and go up and down. You know, so it's been a wild past few months. And just to think, June was just around, it was just a couple months back. And you would have thought after a performance like that, even a post-fight speech, setting up the stage for myself and Petr Yan, I don't know what it is. But I don't know if I pissed in Dana White's Cheerios or something, took his Wheaties. I don't know if a girl that liked him might think I'm cute or think I'm hot. I don't know what I did to the man, but it's pretty fascinating and bizarre all at the same time that I have to do all of this to try to get a title shot. And a lot of it is, I only did one thing. I just won. Everything else was out of my control. And that's what I always say is like, what will be, because you can't control the outside forces. You got to let things just happen and play out in life. And that's kind of been the story of my life for a very, very long time. And I learned it the hard way. I used to get mad. I used to get pissed off at things. And I start to realize, well, I can't control that. So it's like, what's the point of even getting emotionally invested and upset to the point where you're so angry and your day is ruined when you can't change anything? All you can change is what you can do. Go out there, put in the hard work, train, show up on fight night, make sure you're in the right headspace, and try to get your fucking hand raised. And that's all you really can do. And I did just that. So now the stars have finally aligned once again with Corey Sandhagen taking out Marlon Moraes. If Marlon were to win, I'm pretty sure the UFC would have said, well, Marlon deserves another crack because Henry Cejudo retired. He's a striker, you know, he's knocked guys out. This would be a great champion for us to have. The Brazilian market, blah, blah, blah. He beat Sterling 3 years ago. 3 years ago. I am a much different fighter, and it was a short-notice fight, and I studied no tape on him, and shame on me for that. Yeah, he got the win, but to act like the guy sat there and said, I know he's about to shoot, I'm going to hit him with this knee, and time it perfectly, and I'm going to look like a genius. That's not what happened. So for anybody sitting out there and talking shit, because I've got a lot of trolls, anytime Marlon fights, all the trolls come out. And it's whatever. It's the only thing that's annoying is seeing myself getting replayed, getting plastered to the canvas over and over and over and over and over on one short clip. The clip is so short, so they'll just keep replaying the 3 seconds, 3 second boop, 3 second boop, and like a 1 minute reel. So it's that's the only annoying thing. The knockout itself doesn't bother me. Like, I could watch it, but it's when it's on ESPN, it's on this, it's on that, and it's like, all right, I get it. And then I'm getting tagged by people. I'm like, all right, I thought I got a new message from somebody else, but it's just a tag. What is it? Oh, me getting knocked out. Oh, cool. Thank you for that. Not thank you. No thank you. But talking about Corey Sandhagen, his performance, I thought was phenomenal. Came out, set the tone early. Using a lot of feints, a lot of the stuff we were talking about in our last week's podcast, my brother and I, and we were discussing his footwork, his range, his length, his speed. Everyone was saying Marlon was faster. I'm like, have you guys watched these two fight? What about the punches that Marlon throws are fast? They're just really explosive and they catch guys. Like the Assuncao fight when he tags him with the right hand, same thing. He looks down, he spams the overhand right two times, clips him, I don't want to say spam like a video game, but he clips him twice, he throws it twice and drops him, stuns him the first time, the second one drops him. And if you look at Sanhagen fight, the speed at which he throws his punches and his feints, and he does like this thing I call like the little chicken cluck, where it's a funny ass name, but it's like he just twitches just with his head and the shoulders, and he kind of just, you know, it's hard to really describe it, but he does this, it's a subtle feint, and it looks like he's attacking, and he gets guys to react, and that's what he wants. He wants to make you uncomfortable, get you to bite on his feints, and as soon as you start to throw, or you don't throw, you freeze, he starts to light you up a little bit from the outside, whether it's with the kicks, whether it's he steps in, if your hands come high, he reads everything you do. So your hands come high when he does the feints and you freeze, he'll come into the body shot, which he did against Marlon a couple of times, which I thought was super risky to go to liver shot against a guy like Marlon who throws a lot of hooks for his counter. So if you come in on Marlon, he'll counter with big hooks. So once you step into his personal space by throwing a strike, he'll slip it or weave or roll, whatever you want to call it, duck his head, and he'll wing some of those overhands, overhand right or a big left check hook, which he's has a lot of success with. So the fact that Sanhagen was able to get inside, dig to the body, Marlon threw the right hand. I think he threw a two-punch combination. It was a left, a big hook, and then he threw the right hand. The left touched him, but he was covered defensively, sound on Sanhagen's part. And then he threw the right hand, and Sanhagen just shifts his weight backwards, and he's completely gone, nowhere to be touched. There's a lot of good stuff. Even in that second round, he opens up with the front kick. He touches Marlon. Marlon backs up a little bit. He comes back with a feint, and then he goes with the front kick and comes and turns it into a question mark kick and hits him in the head, catches him in the eye, supposedly breaks his orbital bone. And you hear Sanhagen says, his orbital bone is broke. And I'm like, oh, nah, this guy is out here going for gusto. Not saying talking shit, but he's saying stuff that could just be very demoralizing while in the heat of the moment. It's like when someone points at you, and even though they might not have done nothing, it kind of gets in your head where you're going to respond to some degree, or you're just going to try to play it off and act like nothing happened. But you're in the middle of the fight. You know what's what. So that was some of the cool things I saw. Even him going for the flying knee after he caught him with the head kick, cracked him, puts him down, and he hits the spinning wheel kick, ironically, almost like Edson Barboza. But he's the one who hits the head kick on Marlon, who Marlon always puts guys down with the head kick. So I thought that was an interesting twist of fate, for lack of better words. But again, man, I thought Corey Sanhagen, he looked phenomenal. That is a nightmare of an opponent for anybody, even myself. And I know on June 6th, it was a good night for me. And I know that fight could have gone so many different ways. And again, the day of the fight, I made it known to myself, like I made peace with it, like, yo, we're going to somewhat bum rush him, but cut him off, put a lot of pressure, chop down his legs with the kick. We got to make sure we cover up top. We're going to probably eat some strikes, but we got to get inside on him, push him against the cage, and take his ass down. And that's what I did. In the bigger cage, it could be completely different, but I know I could do the same exact thing. If I can get my hands on him, I can do the same exact thing. Put him on the defensive and get him biting on my feints, even though he's a longer fighter. But him going backwards and trying to throw kicks, it leaves him a lot more vulnerable and being on one foot, which opens him up for my attacks and my takedown entries. That's why a fight like that is so fascinating, because any given night, either one of us can win. I'm just fortunate that night was my night, and it could have gone completely the other way, and he could have been the one fighting Petr Yan back in July for the world title. And I think he beats Petr Yan. Petr Yan has only fought one guy in the top five. Well, actually, he wasn't in the top five, and that was Jimmy Rivera. He was I think he might have been the toughest guy he fought. You could say Jose Aldo based on his resume, but the Jose Aldo who has done all those things in the past is not Jose Aldo of today. I'm not saying he's fell off the wagon. He doesn't have the same skill set at all. I'm not saying that. I just think Rivera is a little bit more fresh of what he's done in his career. And you could say Rivera, well, he lost to all you guys. Well, he lost to all the guys in the top of the division. He lost to myself. He beat Pedro Munhoz. Pedro Munhoz beat Cody Garbrandt. So we got to keep these things in mind. It's not MMA math, but you got to keep in mind the type of skill that he has. He fought a surging Cody Stamann and beat him and turned him back and looked the best I think he's looked in his entire UFC run so far. Shut down Uriah Faber, even though it was a very lackluster performance. Got poked in the eyes a couple of times. And he had a really good fight with Petr Yan, who he was winning every single round, won the third round, was winning the first and the second up until the last 20 and 30 seconds where he got caught against the cage. Now, if you can't differentiate from that and see that he's that is the toughest level of caliber of fighter that he's had, most competitive, to go into the third round. When he fought Jose Aldo, he was done at the third round. He was arguably done in the second. So, in the end of the second. So, when you look at it that way, you can see that Petr Yan has fought tough guys, but he hasn't fought the elites of the division like myself and Corey Sandhagen. And I'm not saying that Petr Yan is not good. I think he's a phenomenal talent. But I think out of the four, myself, Marlon, Yan, Sandhagen, I think it's me, it's Sandhagen, it's Yan, then it's Marlon. That's my personal opinion. And maybe Marlon and Sandhagen, Marlon and Moraes can go back and forth, but I think Marlon's style doesn't bode well with guys that move a lot. So maybe he can do well against a guy like Petr Yan, who's a little bit more stationary, but he's very good defensively and he's very good offensively. So I think that's the quad right there of the top four guys at this weight class right now. And what remains to be seen is TJ Dillashaw when he comes back. How good is TJ really when he's not on the stuff? Now, people could say, oh, he only fell for that fight. But, dude, there's been some rumblings for a very long time. And the fact that it's just now coming to light, it says a lot. So I'm going to say where there's smoke, there's fire. And I'm going to say from guys on his team, his old team, who said that he showed them how to do this stuff, I'm putting a lot of stock in that and saying that this guy's been cheating for a very, very long time. And it is what it is. If there's anyone who cheated and made out and showed the blueprint on how to do it and get away with everything and become rich, is TJ Dillashaw. The guy's bought a couple of houses. He's got his spice line. He's bought a boat. Might have bought two boats. And what's better than that? The guy ran off with a big bag of cash, a couple of them, and he's sitting pretty. So if you're going to cheat and do it like that, I mean, what better way than that? You see a lot of guys who cheat and they get busted after the first time and they're making 8-8 or they're making 10-10 for their fights. TJ's made a couple $1 million. So kudos to him. I don't condone cheating, but if there's any way to do it, it's definitely like that. So sucks. It sucks when you do the right thing and other people don't get rewarded, but the guys who cheated get rewarded. So that's my breakdown on the fight for Corey Sandhagen and Petey and, Marlon Moraes. I appreciated that in the post-fight interview, he said that, you know, the only guys that could potentially be in front of him are Frankie Edgar and TJ Dillashaw because of the name value. He understands the game and what's going on. He knows because he sees all the shit that's going on with me. And I'm pretty sure he sees all the shit that's going on with everybody else. And you can kind of understand like, well, these are the only guys who could potentially be in front of me, so why not just go out there and take them out or take out one of them? And I respect that. And he says after he does that, he would like to fight the winner of myself and Petr Yan. So hopefully Dana does what he needs to do and get this fight booked, ready, and made so that we can go on with our lives and get ready for the fights, the title fight. 1 second. I don't think I put my camera on Do Not Disturb. I'm just praying to God nobody calls me because that would be tragic. Next fight, co-main event, Edson Barboza, Makwan Amirkhani. I thought this was a great performance from Barboza. I didn't know what Amirkhani was trying to do. You would think that you would follow the blueprint as a grappler to push the pace on a guy like Barboza, try to catch him against the cage, take him down, smother him, and zap his energy that way. That was not the case. Barboza was on his bike. He was able to light him up, and he looked like a striking god out there. Amirkhani didn't really have any answer for anything. The one time he did get the takedown, the ref stood it up. In my opinion, fast. I'm not saying there was a whole lot going on down there, but you took away the guy's one chance of trying to make something happen, and it's not like he didn't do absolutely anything. He was trying to ground and pound. but there was very little room for him, and he did land a couple of strikes. I'm a very big believer, if you get the takedown and you don't move at all for like 10, 15 seconds, not 10, maybe 15 seconds, 20 seconds, that fight should be stood up because you had your time to rest. Okay, you earned the takedown. We're not going to take it away from you completely. Give you a little time to do what you want to do. Obviously, you're using that takedown as a stalling tactic or a recovering tactic. I get it. But if you're not moving whatsoever, I think the fight should be stood back up. And that's what it should have been. But this one I thought was a little bit different. I thought he was landing some punches when he could. He was trying to work the body. Not that much again. But at the same time, that was his one and only chance of winning. The ref kind of jumped in and interjected himself as always. And I really do not like that ref. He is very, very annoying. Breaks up the fights in the clinch a lot within like 5-10 seconds, if that. Telling guys to watch their mouth and be respectful in the fight. It's just like, dude, can you just focus on your job and just ref the fight? Like, someone was trying to tell me on Twitter that cursing and stuff is like against the rules. I'm like, dude, shut up, man. We're in a fist fight. You're not going to tell me I can't curse at you if that's going to make me perform better. Shut your ass up, man. Shut your ass up. The next fight I wanted to talk about, there's a couple of good ones. This guy Plessis versus Marcus Perez. That was a fun fight. Marcus Perez came out guns blazing. Oh yeah, if you like my shirt, definitely go check out the link in my description box and hit the like button and go get yourself a shirt. You can order it whichever style that you want, whichever color that you want. And remember, I'm coming for that ass. Plessis, South African fighter, takes out Marcus Perez. I know a lot of people are saying that the African community is going to get really, really upset because he's saying he's the real African. Technically, he is right. He is from South Africa, which is in Africa. So technically, that does make him African. I can understand what he's saying about Izzy Adesanya, lives out in New Zealand. I can understand what he's saying about Kamaru Usman, lives out in the States. And who else is there? That's really it. As a champ, yes. As a champ and as a potential fighter, everyone else lives in the States. I think he actually lives in South Africa still. So I get what he's saying. Yes, whatever. But Marcus Perez looked phenomenal. I thought it was the best he ever looked. Had he had landed that elbow, game of inches, he grazed the face of Plessis when he hit that spinning back elbow and got caught in the ear and got dropped. Went down instantly. As he spun right into it. The elbow grazed Plessis. He missed, didn't land on the money like he wanted to, and had he had done that, that fight would have been a complete different situation. In my personal opinion, that would have put him out. So he doesn't get the knockout. He gets knocked out. Plessis looks like a genius. And again, back and forth, not even, I can't even call it back and forth. I want to say Plessis was on the wrong side of that in the first round. It was only the first round at that, but he didn't. He looked kind of nervous, UFC jitters and all that. So for Perez to go out there and look the way he did against a guy who was highly touted in Plessis, I thought that said a lot. And Perez is always a fun fight. My brothers were asking me, if you think he's good, why don't you tell me so I can bet on him? I was like, dude, he's a wild card. I'm not saying he's not good, not saying he's bad. He's just such a wild card where you just don't know what you're going to get with this guy. And you saw it there. He looks great 1 minute and then could get caught. And not saying that happens to him a lot, but, you know, he got a little fancy and he paid the ultimate price for it in not the good way that he probably intended. And again, that was very Yair, Chang Sung Jung-like. If he had landed that elbow, I think Plessis is going face down from the impact just for him coming forward and that elbow just grazing his face. That hits the chin, orbital, or the eye socket, the nose. That's a different fight. Much different fight, much different ending. But congrats to Plessis remaining undefeated, if I remember correctly. Nope, he's 15-2. That was the other guy from Georgia. Georgia. Tom Aspinall, he is a beast. Knocked out Alan Baudet in round one, 1 minute, 35 seconds. Super good striker. Now, Allen threw two spinning back elbows in the clinch in close proximity, and they both grazed him. And again, game of inches where if he stepped in a little bit more, that could have been Tom Aspinall face down, ass up, with a record of 9-2, 27 years old, 78-inch reach, 6 5 for a heavyweight. He is on a 5-fight win streak right now. His loss was an illegal elbow. It says a loss, though. And then it says illegal. 12-6. Oh, he threw the illegal elbow. Wow. And the other loss was a heel hook. So I think the heavyweight division is finally starting to heat up and get interesting. There's a lot of good guys now that the UFC has signed. Agile guys. Guys really good with jiu-jitsu. That guy, Juan Espinal, he comes to mind. I hope I didn't butcher his name. The Spaniard guy. He kind of reminds me of a Frank Mir, a young Frank Mir with amazing BJJ, young, revitalized, can strike, can do it all. But for the most part, he's predominantly a grappler. So I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen in the next year or two with the heavyweight division, because there's so much good talent there now. And it's actually, for me, worth watching outside of the top five, because the top five guys were the only guys I really liked watching. Everybody else was typically a sloth in terms of like cardio. And I'm not saying they were sloth, like they're bad to watch. They're, sloth is like, maybe I shouldn't have called them sloths, but they were not fun to watch. More so stuck in the mud. The heavyweight division just wasn't fun. Just like some of those heavyweight guys might say, us lighter guys aren't fun to watch because we don't knock nobody out, but we're way more technical and we have crazier fights. The heavyweight guys, it's either like a rock'em sock'em robot, or they just lay on each other, or they get finished really quick. So the entertainment value is just like, you just really never know what you're going to get. But when you have guys like this who come out, put on a pace of a fight, guys like Juan who are coming out looking to submit guys, looking to make it exciting, and they just don't look like a bunch of older heads in there and slow or out of shape or just standing and looking at each other and just... It is a fist fight. I don't think there should be action nonstop. Obviously, we have a cardio tank. We are all human, so I get that aspect as well. But again, it just looks like some of the heavyweight guys, they look like they don't even train. And it's kind of sad to say, like, you could be a big dude and get to the UFC. Back in the days, and even now, you could probably still do it, be a big dude, win a couple fights, you get the right matchups, just make it all stand up, you could potentially get signed to the UFC that quickly, because the heavyweight division is that shallow in terms of talent. And you can tell me I'm wrong. Tell me an asshole. Call me an asshole. If you think I'm an asshole, if you think I'm wrong, let me know in the comments. Whatever. Ilya Topuria beats Yusuf Zalal. Unanimous decision. 29-28. He's now 9-0. Georgian fighter. I believe he is a bantamweight, but it says featherweight. I know he had fought once at bantamweight, I thought. Whatever. He's got a bunch of finishes. Win, win. Then it says choke, 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 choke. No punches. And now decision. So this was a fun one for multiple reasons. A lot of guys in the Georgian community, some of my teammates, Marab, even Roman over here in Vegas, all high on this guy. And for right reasons. His jiu-jitsu game was nothing short of impressive, in my personal opinion. And Yusuf was even more impressive in terms of being able to survive, because he's predominantly a striker. And he a couple of times he jumped for the guillotine. Maybe the first time he could have gotten away with it at the end of the round. It makes sense. Okay, play the game a little bit for the judges and the crowd. But he constantly kept initiating the clinch, trying to take him down. I didn't understand what the game plan was at that point. I think he kind of shot himself in the foot. Maybe his arms were a little bit more fatigued from defending the chokes and whatnot, but I think Topuria taking the fight on short notice, 8 days, he should have been more fatigued, and rightfully so, he did look fatigued, and I think that should have been Yusuf's sign to attack the body, stay long, use a lot of front kicks, maybe even calf kicks, a lot of feints, and just try to touch him up from the outside. But there was a couple times he would throw a hook and initiate the striking exchange, but then while throwing the hook, he opened up himself for a level change and for a takedown entry for Topuria. I think Topuria's fun as hell to watch. Guillotine submissions, trapped arm guillotines, anaconda chokes, darce chokes. He was going for it all. My type of guy when it comes to grappling. Just constantly attacking. Reminds me of a young Bryce Mitchell, who is obviously still young. How old is Topuria? Let's find out. 23 years old. Crazy. Now, the next fight, Tom Breeze versus KB Buller. Round one, knocked him out with a jab. Dropped him. Floored him with the jab. It was like a javelin. Just came out, stepped into it hard. Bang. Dropped him to the ground, followed up with some strikes, and got the early first round finish. 1 minute and 42 seconds left in the round. There was a lot of good fights. There's so many good guys to give shout outs to. Chris Dawkins, he looked great. I believe he's also a heavyweight. He's 10-3. Also a heavyweight. He's 31 years old, so he's a little bit on the younger side. He fought for Cage Fury a bunch. CES. He fought a lot for Cage Fury. He lost to Sean T at Cage Fury. Came back. Who did he beat? He beat Anthony Coleman, King of the Cage. Cage Fury, he beat Polinio Cruz. He beat Joshua Marsh, who is a wrestler that wrestled in college, wrestled with me. He's from Brentwood, national champ, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Very, very good wrestler. I'm not sure if Joshua's even fighting anymore. He's 4-5 in his last few. He's 29 years old, 6'3". Called him the Shrug Master because he shrugged everybody in college for the most part. He won his last one, 2019, in November. Okay. He beat our guy, Edwin Smart, at Ring of Combat, which I didn't remember that he fought Edwin. Fuck. He beat Azuna Anyanwu, who got to the UFC. Also Cage Fury. He beat Danny Holmes, Cage Fury. Yeah, he lost to Justin Ledain and the UFC cut him. So he only had one fight in the UFC. Oh, shit. Okay. And, you know, he beat Parker Porter, and now he just beat Rodrigo Nascimento. And he looks good, man. Like I was saying, man, you got these younger guys, not 38 years old, not 40 years old in the heavyweight division. A younger, like you can see the heavyweight division finally start to average younger in terms of the age, where the average age seemed to be 38, 39 or something like that. You had DC who was fighting. He was 40 years old. You had Stipe who was 37, 38 years old. Derek Lewis, older guy. Andre Arlovski, older guy. You got Overeem, an older guy. A lot of these guys are older guys. So I'm not talking shit about the weight class, but it's hard to get those competitive, fun fights with the older bangers. And I'm not saying it's not fun fights at all, but in comparison to the other divisions, I don't know. It just comes off bad no matter how you say it. I'm just saying the heavyweight division is just an older division in comparison to the other weight classes, especially the bantamweight division. And I'm getting older. I'm 31, 32 in July. So, you know, but you see a lot of these guys who are 23, 21 years old. It's a young man's sport, and you can see why. These guys are coming up younger. They're getting a lot of experience at a very young age, and they are freaking good. Good. Yeah, so Chris Dawkins gets the win. Round one, tees up Nascimento, takes him out. Now, the highlight of the card, in my opinion, outside of being a marquee fight, Joaquin Buckley taking out Impa Kasangane. Round two, he pretty much just goes, here, hold my leg. Yo, hold my leg real quick. You got it? You sure? All right, hold this. Boom, spinning back kick to the face. Now, I missed round one. That's fine, but I was told from Eric Nipsick, the coach over here, that Joaquin Buckley was winning the round anyway. He won round one. And then round two, my man throws a front kick. He catches it, parries it the right way, but holds it. He doesn't like hold. He doesn't swipe it across. He doesn't catch it and lift it up. He doesn't catch it, pull himself in and throw a strike. He holds it. He freezes for a second, and maybe he was calculating or trying to figure out what his next attack was going to be. But that brief moment, which was only like a 1/1000, and everyone was kind of like, well, he held it for so long. I'm like, well, did he really hold it for that long? I don't think so. I think it was like a 1 second count from the second that he catches the leg, 1/1001. He jumps up, spins, hits the back kick, and takes him out. And I know today there's going to be a lot of guys in the gym doing that shit, and I'm going to try to do that shit myself. So, crazy. Impressive knockout. I think knockout of the century. I definitely think it makes my knockout look not all that cool anymore. And obviously, I did have style points, but this was like, That's something straight out of the Matrix. You don't see that every day. You don't see that at all. You might see attempts when guys catch the kick, like Benson Henderson, where you hold the foot and he'll try to push off the cage and jump and throw that other leg. And you see that coming. But this was, you got the leg, I'm going to throw a spinning back kick to your face. It's almost like a Taekwondo two-touch, where I would tap with the lead leg and then turn. So the lead leg is just a tap to push off and get my momentum. So I run, it's like almost like Law and Tekken, where I'm running up your leg and going pop, pop. Or Horang, where he's jumping in the air and doing a two-touch back kick. Bang, bang. Beautiful. He says he's been working it a lot on the bob and all this stuff, kind of like Corey Sandhagen. Says he's been in the basement. He's been in the house and during quarantine with the bob and his girlfriend holding the kick shield and him working his wheel kicks and stuff like that. And I thought that, you know, both really cool stuff and shows that this sport is still evolving and there's a lot of innovative ways to approach a lot of attacks and stuff like that. So congrats to him. He had that really cool clip with him and Dana White in the back room. I thought that was really dope. Dana came back there and then pretty much saying like they should give him all the bonuses. He should get a really fat check because that's a highlight that they're going to be able to throw in the pay-per-view opener for years to come because that's never going to be topped. It's like the Anthony Showtime Pettis kick. Off the cage, drops Benson Henderson, never to be repeated to this day. This is going to be one of those kicks that I can't see anybody repeating for a very, very long time. There's going to be a lot of attempts. Trust me. There's a lot of attempts with the Showtime kick. There's going to be a lot of attempts with this one. The next fight, Tony Kelly versus Ali Al-Kwaisi. I got to watch this fight again because I think that round one, I don't remember who really won. But I thought Ali did enough to win the fight. Tony Kelly coming down to 135. I don't think he's ever fought at 135 before. I'm going to have to verify that. But bantamweight, he's 33 years old. 5'9". His name is Prime Time. Shoulder choke versus Chris Pham. This was, what weight class was this fight? I'm not sure, but I'm trying to see if I could fight it. It says weight 145, legacy. Pham. Yeah, this was at 145. So I think he was just coming down to this weight for this with the UFC PI. Because someone was telling me, it's like, yeah, I've been working with Kelly trying to help him with his weight cut. So I could see this is probably what they were talking about because he was up at 145 for such a long time. Yeah, featherweight bout. And Kevin Aguilar, that was Legacy FC, featherweight bout. He lost that one. Yeah, he lost that one, split decision. Got signed to the UFC, Kai Kamaka III, Miocic versus Stipe, the trilogy. And he lost this one at featherweight as well. This was in the UFC. And he goes down, fights Kelly. He fights Al-Kwaisi at bantamweight. Now, at the end, Casey comes pretty much, you know, he kicks him at the end. And then he walks up to him. He's, like, happy. The fight's over, whatever. They give each other a dab, and then he, like, slaps him on the chest. And then Kelly gets really pissed off and shoves him. And he's like, oh, you do wrong. Oh, you do wrong. That's it. That's it. He was really pissed off. But then he ended up getting the decision. Unanimous at that. Not even a split. So, kudos to him for getting that. Bantamweight debut. He's a big dude. Kind of reminds me of Brandon Davis coming down to 135. Now, when guys are doing that, I think they happen to be a lot slower. Because they're bigger frames, and for them to keep that same pops and speed all at the bantamweight division from that big weight cut, I think it's going to be very, very hard for them to do. Some other fun fights. Giga Chikadze versus Omar Morales trying to get the finish. Came short, didn't get the finish, but looked spectacular. Dropped Omar Morales with a huge right hand, overhand right. Boom! Bang him. I thought the fight was going to be stopped. Right there with the follow-up of the punches because he went berserk after that. Couldn't get the finish. And it's just been fascinating to see that he's had three fights now go to a decision where he prides himself on being a finisher with his kickboxing fights. So it's really crazy to see this. Liver shot, finish, punch, finish. Liver KO, And to see this, I know he's been pretty upset about it. But what can you do, man? You just got to keep fighting a good fight, and hopefully you can get it. His record now, 11-2. He fought Irwin Rivera, short notice fight, Jamal Emmers, split decision, Omar Morales, unanimous decision, Brandon Davis, split decision, Damian Manzanares, tap out to punches, round one. And that was Gladiator Challenge. So he's having a tough time getting finishes, but we all know he's super exciting to watch. And those left kicks that he's been throwing, the Giga Kick, nasty. I think he's just going to be a little bit more, maybe the next one, I think. I don't know who they're going to match him up with now, but him being on this win streak that he's on right now, 1, 2, 3 fights in the UFC, oh, actually 4, 1, 2, 3, 4 fights in the UFC, 4-0. I think it's time that the UFC is going to give him a step up. I know they want to groom him and probably get him a finish before they push him up like that, but I think he's pretty much well on his way, taking out everybody that he's putting that's been put in front of him. So there's not much to be said about that. Tracy Cortez, she looked good in her fight versus Stephanie Egger. She says she didn't know that that was a black belt that she was fighting, and she found out during the fight. And the last one that I want to talk about was Tagir Ulanbekov. This was a fun freaking fight, card opener, fight of the night, in my opinion. For him to go out there, Tagir, make his, I believe this was his debut, 13-1, trains out of Dagestan, very good friends with Khabib and his dad, rest in peace to his father. He's 5'7", 29 years old, UFC debut. Bruno Silva brought it. Bruno Silva was shockingly impressive to me, very fun to watch. I know he talked a little shit to me on my Instagram, talking about Henry Cejudo and during that whole thing. Anyway, guys, if you remember, if you like this, definitely hit that like button and subscribe. But he looked very impressive. I thought he fought a very smart, intelligent fight, high-level fight. I think if he had stuck with those calf kicks, which were starting to pay dividends, I thought in the first and the second round, I thought that could have been his fight to steal. I thought Tagir made some really good adjustments, getting his leg out of the way, finding his combinations, and getting the fight down to the ground to stifle and slow down Bruno Silva, who hit. Bruno Silva hit some really good throws. Tagir hit some really good outside trips from the body lock position, over under 50-50, underhook, overhook, locking his hands, stepping behind the leg, and taking him down. Really good takedowns on both sides. Fun to watch. I got to train with him a little bit up here. And I think he's really, very, I think he's really, really good. And I'm excited to see what's going to be next for him in this flyweight division. And I just think the level of talent is just getting so deep at that flyweight division. And I'm just glad the UFC decided to keep the flyweights around. They had a barn burner of a first round. And even the second round. And the third, I think, I don't know if they got it, but they should have gotten fired tonight. That fight was absolutely ridiculous. Good fight over all the way around. And again, very impressed with Bruno Silva. I thought if there was any a performance that he could have decided to show up, it was that when he fought his ass off, fought really, really hard. And that it came down to me, I think, that third round. One judge even gave it 30-27 to Tagir, which I was shocked by. But, yeah. I thought he won the round, round one, doing more damage with those calf kicks and some combinations here and there. Second round, I thought Tagir took it. And I thought third round is where it's going to come down to who has the biggest heart and who wanted it more. And both guys brought it, man. There was no denying that both guys fought with a ton of heart and a ton of passion. But at the end of the day, it was Tagir who got his hand raised. But I'm definitely excited to see the next performance that's going to happen for Bruno Silva. And other than that, I want to thank you guys for tuning in. As always, I'm about to get ready to go hit some pads and go crush some shit. I love you guys. Be safe. Take it easy. And let's go get this freaking belt. Next stop, Petey Yan. I'm coming for that. Pause. Peace. Until next time.